Christina Menenti with your worldwide news update. Israeli airstrikes hit Yemen's rebel-held capital and port city after Houthi attacks targeted Israel. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Israel's defense minister says the country would not allow the continuation of shooting from Yemen's Houthi rebels. Hours after Israel launched heavy airstrikes on rebel sites, Israel cuts ads. Remember, whoever raises a hand against the state of Israel has a hand that will be cut off. Whoever harms us will be harmed sevenfold back. The statement follows a series of intense Israeli strikes that shook Yemen's capital and a port city and killed at least 9 people, officials say, shortly after a Houthi missile targeted central Israel and badly damaged a school building. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
U.S. and Arab mediators are working around the clock to hammer out a ceasefire deal between Israel and Hamas, sources close to the talks said. While in the Gaza Strip, medics said Israeli strikes had killed 26 Palestinians on Thursday. U.S. House Speaker Mike Johnson and lawmakers were meeting late into the night after President-elect Donald Trump came out against a continuing resolution to fund the government. AP correspondent Kevin Fracking reports.
Lawmakers are a bit stunned, and they're also at this stage at a loss where exactly to go with a bill that could avert a shutdown at midnight Friday. They're exploring various options, but it's clear that they really don't have one at this stage that has bipartisan support, and that's usually what it takes to get this type of bill over the finish line.
Kevin Fracking for the Associated Press. Kill the Bill billionaire ally Elon Musk wrote on his social media platform X as he dangled primary challenges against anyone who voted for the budget deal, a threat Trump later echoed in a post of his own. This is VOA News. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky attended an EU summit in Brussels Thursday. The meeting took place as European Union leaders aimed to send a clear signal to U.S. President-elect Donald Trump about their continued support for Ukraine.
From the very beginning of next year, we need very much unity between the United States and EU and countries of Europe. This is very important. We need this unity to achieve peace. And I think only together the United States and Europe can really stop Putin and save Ukraine.
Zelensky also met with Ursula von der Leyen, president of the European Commission. Russian President Vladimir Putin said on Thursday that he was ready to compromise over Ukraine and possible talks with Donald Trump on ending the war. What can I offer to the president-elect Trump when we meet? First of all, I don't know when we will meet because he doesn't say anything about it. I haven't spoken to him for more than 4 years, and I am ready for it, of course, at any time, and I will be ready for a meeting if he wants it. Putin dismissed an assertion that Russia was in a weak position, saying that Russia had gotten much stronger since he ordered troops into Ukraine in 2022. Trump has vowed to end the conflict, but has not yet given any details on how. French President Emmanuel Macron traveled to Mayotte to survey the devastation wrecked by Cyclone Chido. French authorities said at least 31 people have died and more than 1,500 people were injured, more than 200 critically. But it's feared hundreds or even thousands of people have died after the strongest cyclone in nearly a century ripped through the French territory off the coast of Africa on Saturday. Supporters of French mass rape victim Gisèle Pelicot cheered as Dominique Pelicot was sentenced to 20 years in prison by a court in Avignon Thursday. Pelicot pleaded guilty to the charges during the 3-month trial and apologized to his family. Gisèle Pelicot spoke to the press and supporters after the verdict. By opening the doors to this trial on the 2nd of September last year, I wished for society to join in on the debates that were held. I never regretted this decision. I trust now in our capacity to collectively sees a future in which each one of us, woman and man, may live in harmony with mutual respect and understanding. The Pelicot trial, as it has come to be known, has attracted worldwide attention and turned into an examination of the pervasiveness of sexual violence in France and beyond. The number of people killed and missing remains unclear 2 days after a magnitude 7.3 earthquake struck the Pacific island nation of Vanuatu. The scale of the damage became clearer on Thursday when telecommunications were partially restored. The devastation is concentrated in downtown Port Vila, the capital, with aid and rescue efforts focused on providing water, shelter, and recovering trapped people. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Christina Menenti, VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
There are ongoing reports and voices about the fact that Russia can, like, substitute Syria with Libya.
That's Alessandro Sicipione, a political analyst and expert on the European Union and North Africa, on Russia establishing an air bridge with Libya. Details coming up. Also, French President Emmanuel Macron is in Mayotte to survey the devastation from Cyclone Chido. And in Malawi, a journalist group is working to improve accuracy in reporting and help reporters build credibility. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. An Italian website that monitors military aircraft and ships in the Mediterranean says it has spotted the establishment of an air bridge between Russia and Libya. The site, Ita Milradar, says two aircraft from the Russian Ministry of Emergency Situations are flying the route regularly. Journalist Noura Hafizaida has more.
The Ultima Radar flight tracking website says the two ILY USA Cheyenne 7060D aircraft are alternating regular flights between Russia and the Al Khadim Air Base in eastern Libya. The website added that it is known that Russian military assets and personnel previously associated with the mercenary Wagner group and now part of what's called the Africa Corps are present in Libya. Abdelmonem El-Har is a Libyan political analyst and civil society activist. He says, Russia may want access to a base in Jafra in the center of Libya. He says Russia seeks to restore its role in Middle East and North Africa, so Russia would like to take the Jafra base. He says that is a very important strategic base toward Africa, where Wagner forces were present, and then it would become the first official base for the launch of Russian corps forces toward Africa. While it's been known that Russia had a presence in Libya, what has changed is fall of the Bashar al-Assad government in Syria. Assad had granted Russia military bases in Syria, which formed major points of contact and transfer for Russian equipment and soldiers to their positions in Libya. The loss of Assad's cooperation raises question in Libya about the future of the Russian effort to expand into Africa through the land controlled by retired Libyan General Khalifa Haftar. Alessandro Scipioni is a political analyst and expert on the European Union and North Africa.
After the recent development in Syria, there are ongoing reports and voices about the fact that Russia can, like, substitute Syria with Libya, since there are several logistics and technical problems other than political ones, that perhaps the Libyan Eastern authorities needs first to give green light to this. And I'm not sure it's going to be so easy.
The deployment of the mercenary Wagner forces in Libya added to Western concerns about Russian encroachment in the country, which were reflected in visits and statements by European and American officials to Haftar between 2020 and 2023. They have warned him against strengthening with relationship with Russia. After Wagner commander Yevgeny Prigozhin died in a plane crash in 2023, Russian Deputy Defense Minister Yunus Bek Yevakrov visited Benghazi and met with Haftar. Regional analysts have said that visit marked the beginning of a new phase in Russian military operations in Libya. Abdelmanam Alhar says Russia now has its eye on other Libyan bases, and there is talk about handing over the Al-Watya base in southwestern Libya, replacing the Turkish troops now operating there with Russians. He says, however, the European Union and United States will oppose that idea. For VOA, I am Noura Faith in Tunisia.
France's President Emmanuel Macron traveled today to the Indian Ocean archipelago of Mayotte to survey the devastation from Cyclone Chido. According to Newswire reports, Macron got a helicopter tour of the damage and was to spend Thursday night in the French territory. After flying over the destruction, he headed to the hospital in Mamoudzou, Mayotte's capital, to meet medical staff and patients. Some residents also expressed distress at not knowing about the fate of those missing and the dead, partly because of the Muslim practice of burying the dead within 24 hours. French authorities have said at least 31 people died and more than 1,500 people were injured, more than 200 critically. It's feared the final death toll could be in the hundreds. Mayotte, in the Indian Ocean between mainland Africa's east coast and northern Madagascar, is France's poorest territory. The cyclone devastated entire neighborhoods. Many people ignored the warnings, thinking the storm would not be so extreme. The cyclone went on to cause severe damage and fatalities in Mozambique and Malawi. Mayotte is the only part of the Comoros archipelago that voted to remain a part of France in a 1974 referendum. Nigerian authorities in oil-rich River State have unveiled six military-grade gunboats to help security agents battle the piracy and oil theft that have plagued the Niger Delta region for decades. The latest measure is part of a broader crackdown aiming to boosting Nigeria's oil production. Timothy Obiezu reports from River State.
Local singers and dancers enthralled hundreds of delegates at the ceremony marking the handover of six military gunboats to Nigeria's Navy in southern Rivers State. It's the latest effort by state authorities to support a national crackdown on oil thieves and to check piracy along the waterways in the Niger Delta. Officials say the boats will bolster the Navy's ability to patrol and respond to threats, especially near submerged oil export pipelines, which are often prone to attacks by thieves. Siminalayi Fubara is the River State governor.
We're doing logistic support to Nigerian Navy, who are the closest agency that can battle the ones off the land. It's a big problem. The technology involved in the line, when you see them, you know that it's not small engineering, it's a professional.
Nigeria has long declared a war on crude oil theft, but the problem has continued to cut into the government's income and disrupt exports. Authorities estimate the country loses $10 billion every year, or the equivalent of about 200,000 barrels of oil per day, to illegal actors. Corruption, lack of security, and poor regulation have hindered authorities' ability to effectively curb the problem. Fugbara says in addition to heightening security measures, state authorities will expand investments in infrastructure, healthcare, and education in local communities most prone to oil theft to dissuade them from the practice.
This problem is not just a problem that's attacking those people on the field can solve. What we need is a total reorientation. But you need to engage them.
The state-owned Nigerian National Petroleum Company said this week that 94 incidents of crude oil theft occurred between November 30 and December 6th. On Thursday, the Nigerian military said its 90-day Operation Delta Safe, a program that aims to reduce oil theft and increase production, was successful upon its conclusion in mid-October. Rear Admiral John Okeke is commander of the operation. He spoke to journalists.
We've been able to arrest and appropriate handling of over 300 vehicles comprising trucks, tankers, cars, tricycles, conveying crude oil and illegal products. Similarly, we've been able to handle over 15 million liters of stolen crude oil and about 4 million liters of illegal refined automotive gasoline oil.
Authorities say Nigeria plans to use drones, automated metering systems, and other technology to monitor its oil pipelines next year. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. I'm your host, Yehia Suhib, in Washington. The widely publicized registration of thousands of small South African grocers, popularly known as spaza shops, has been extended after many were unable to register on time. The registration process has heightened tensions between foreign nationals and locals, with some citizens threatening to use violence to shut shops licensed by foreign nationals. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The government's 21-day registration period for spaza shops was marred by long queues, lack of clarity on registration requirements, and violence in some places. Many intending to register were still in long lines on the last day of registration on December 17th. Some foreign nationals who run most of the small food shops were violently barred from registering by citizens who want the small shops reserved for South Africans only. Velenkosini Shabisa, Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, says the government considered several factors before extending the registration to the end of February next year.
For this process, the environmental health practitioners and other regulatory authorities will still inspect owners of registered food-related trading businesses to ensure that their businesses are eligible to trade.
More than 1 million foreigners live in the country, and many citizens blame them for the country's high unemployment rate. South Africa has been hit by periodic episodes of anti-foreigner violence over the past decade. There were complaints that some registration centers were not clear about what documents were needed, so applicants had to make multiple trips to various municipality offices. Palisa Mahapa, a South African national lined up at a registration center in Soweto, says it was clear from the start that the local municipalities had no capacity to register thousands of shop owners in 21 days.
There's queue, and they didn't plan for it accordingly. The service that we are getting, it's very poor, it's slow. There's old people here, there's people who are sick, and then they are also suffering. It's holiday time now, and we must be busy with this thing. It's not nice.
Victoria Africa, a South African national, vows locals will physically close shops licensed by foreign nationals. She accuses foreign-owned shops of being the source of the food that killed the children.
We've been warning the government for the past five years, if not mistaken. But to this day, they still have not implemented the laws of the Immigration Act. And I am telling you now, I can tell you confidently so, that we will lead the government. We are left with no choice. We will lead the government. They will just have to sit back and watch.
But Tibetso Kero, another foreign national waiting to submit his application, denies the allegations.
We don't think bad things. We don't do bad things in South Africa, understand? We don't do the crimes. That's ours. What we want is we want to be registered as the right way with the right law. That's what we want. We need the right things.
The government says more than 49,000 people have applied for licenses for spazas and food handling facilities, but only 19,000 have been approved. Reporting for VOA News in Johannesburg, I am Tuso Kumalo.
Malawians, where verifying information is filled with challenges, the local chapter of the Media Institute of South Africa is working to improve accuracy in reporting and help journalists build credibility. Lamek Masina has this report from Lilongwe, Malawi.
Suzio Chitete is an investigative journalist and deputy chief editor of Malawi's daily newspaper, The Nation, at Lilongwe. Every morning, he arrives at work with the belief that journalism is a calling to provide the truth to readers. Chitete and several other Malawian journalists attended a series of fact-checking training sessions that equip journalists with the skills to debunk misinformation and disinformation.
The training has brought that kind of reminder and awareness that each time we are doing stories, each time we are interviewing somebody, we must pay attention to deep fakes or to fake, fake statements so that audiences are given credible information.
Misa Malawi, the local chapter of the Media Institute of Southern Africa, runs these programs with support from various international organizations. It's a fact-checking skills for journalists initiative is supported by Deutsche Welle's Center for International Media Development.
We have DW Academy of German, which has been supporting the core of our work at MISA Malawi in terms of capacity building projects for Malawi journalists. We have a partnership with UNESCO, looking at supporting election reporting in general, which has we have also been able to tap into to support the areas of fact-checking.
Matonga says the MISA Malawi Journalism Education Project is offering training to Malawian journalists to prevent the spread of misinformation and disinformation, which is especially important as the country prepares for its 2025 general elections.
We had listened to a tragic death of a vice president, and there were a lot of fake stories which were being speculated about what happened for the plane to crash. These incidents remind us and point us at how dangerous fake news can be. We are heading towards an election. Previously, we had an election in 2019 and 2020, presidential elections. Then we started seeing trends around fake news or potentially again affecting the political space.
The areas of focus include fact-checking politicians and election-related claims and verifying media content such as images and videos by using tools like Google Image Search. Radio presenter Shakira Juma says she treats information posted on social media with skepticism.
I get selective to news which I tend to believe or not, because of the social media fake news, fake posts which are happening nowadays. So that's it. I can't trust anything.
Trainers say fake news is rampant in Malawi, largely because of social media users who race to scoop journalists by posting stories that are unverified, deceptive, or even invented.
Because also sometimes as media, we have fallen into this trap where the stories that we tell are only of those in the echelons of power. We're not telling the people stories. So the people now, the former audiences, have become their own storytellers.
Gajabira says debunking fake stories has been a challenge because there is such little solid information about local news in sub-Saharan Africa.
So for instance, if you take a picture that was taken in the Western world, you will find that if you go and fact check it, you go and do a reverse image, it's easier to fact check. So we need more information about us from sub-Saharan Africa, from Southern Africa on the internet, so that we can also make this work easier. Otherwise, it's not as easy to do fact-checking in our context as it is in the Western context.
Matonga says besides the training, Mr. Malawi and UNDP are also working on a new project that will help promote credible news reporting during the 2025 general elections. Lamek Masina, VOA Africa, Lilongwe, Malawi.
With the incoming Trump administration's pledge to begin mass deportations of undocumented immigrants in the United States, some mayors in Democratic states are taking steps to prepare for the new policies. Aaron Ranen reports from New York City.
Democratic New York City Mayor Eric Adams announced that the migrant shelter at Floyd Bennett Field will close by January 15th. The shelter is in a national park where federal authorities, not city officials, have jurisdiction. Catherine Cliff is an attorney with the Legal Aid Society of New York.
We have been concerned about Floyd Bennett Field since the election results. It is the only shelter on federal land, and we do think that could pose additional risks.
In recent interviews, President-elect Trump has signaled that he will prioritize border and immigration enforcement early in his administration. Democratic leaders have been working to shield undocumented immigrants before he takes office. Meanwhile, immigrants without legal status at the shelter have expressed concerns about stricter enforcement under the new administration. Jose is an undocumented immigrant staying at the Brooklyn shelter with his family.
I see that he is a man who says what he means and keeps his word. Let's wait and see what happens.
Jose says he believes that the actions of a few individuals are unfairly tarnishing the reputation of all immigrants.
There are many immigrants like my compatriots who come to commit crimes and steal. So sometimes just because of one person, everyone pays the price.
Jose is part of one of the two largest immigrant surges in U.S. history. During the Biden administration, roughly 8 million immigrants entered the country. The second comparable migrant wave occurred in the early 1850s, according to New York Times analysis of government data. Aaron Corcoran is a professor at the University of Notre Dame.
I think the numbers that we've seen in the last couple of years are historic, the largest number that we've seen in history by pure number, not by necessarily by percentage.
In the face of these overwhelming numbers, New York City Mayor Adams is adopting a conciliatory approach. Recently, he met with President-elect's incoming border czar to discuss the evolving situation. Eric Adams is the mayor of New York City.
My conversation today with the border czar to figure out how do we go after those individuals who are repeatedly committing crimes in our city. We're going to tell those who are here, who are law-abiding, to continue to utilize the services that they have a right to utilize, educating their children, health care, public protection. But we will not be a safe haven for those who commit violent acts.
Many of Mayor Adams' recent actions may be strategic moves to retain a measure of local control, Corcoran suggests.
I do think that one of the calculations he's probably making is he may be recognizing that he might not be able to stop all mass deportations or all mass raids in New York City. But if he's seen as cooperating to some extent, he may have some leverage to sort of figure out how those raids might be prioritized or what communities might be protected.
As blue state leaders adjust, it remains to be seen how effective these efforts will be. Aaron Rainin, VOA News, New York City.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Cedric Franklin, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.